JJ. JJ.
Yeah.
I was just gonna mention that it's ironic with the whole the Mars with the atomic warfare, because it's that's what Elon Musk was saying, that to terraform Mars we would need artificial sun or a lot of explosions to heat the...
Yeah, he said off atomic bombs there would melt the ice and everything.
Mars would see explosions again, you know, because humans want to habitate it. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, he wants to go to Mars and terraform it, which would be take hundreds of years. What I would suggest is to capture an asteroid, hollow it out. Because if we went on Mars, it only has a third the gravity of Earth. And who knows what kind of offspring we would have in that lower gravity. It may really negatively affect us. But if we captured an asteroid, say 10 to 20 miles in diameter, and we hollowed it out, we could get rare minerals out of there and make a lot of money selling them. But then after it's hollowed out, we could create an artificial sun in the center and create a Garden of Eden in all of the inner asteroid, and we could spin it so the centrifugal force could create artificial gravity exactly equal to the Earth. Then we could turn that into a great spaceship and navigate it anywhere in the solar system. So in that asteroid, you could go visit Saturn and look at its rings or whatever you want to do, you know. That would be really cool. But I would think that would be a lot easier than terraforming Mars, and also profitable from the mining of the rare elements.
Well, let's just go capture an asteroid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds real easy.
There's a lot of fantastic ideas around. Like W.C. Fields once said, I'll solve the problem of German submarines with this boil the ocean.
Yeah.
How are you going to boil the ocean?
Well, I mean...
That was the joke.
How are you going to do what...
You don't have to destroy anything if you capture an asteroid. What
you're
doing is...
Big rope.
Big rope?
Yeah.
You just send the spaceship over there, and you hollow it out.
Hollow it right out.
And you
big shovel.
Big drill.
You put a propulsion system on it, and you can navigate it anywhere in the solar system. So you could we could capture one of the things we could capture would be one of the moons of Mars. They're very small. One of them is only like 10 miles in diameter. It's just about the perfect size. We could capture that and put a propulsion system on it and navigate it over closer to Earth if we wanted.
We could throw Mars out of sync.
It's not big enough to throw Mars out of sync. So, yeah. But yeah, a lot of people would probably complain, hey, you're interfering with
Mars. Martians wouldn't like it.
We could hollow out Mars and just live on the inside.
Yeah.
Adam has a comment.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, thinking about Sanat Kumara's karma and his great sacrifice, if, you know, we've talked a lot about the fact that the hierarchy in World War II, you know, ready to sort of withdraw for a time because they saw the writing on the wall, and probably Sanat Kumara's hands were tied because, you know, humanity has free will. But these great inner galactic cosmic beings came and assisted us. And Dige says it was because of the massed prayer of general humanity, right? It wasn't the disciples, it was general humanity.
Yeah.
But I wonder if part of that was their compassion and respect for Sanat Kumara taking such a ballsy decision and wanting to help keep that plan alive and, you know, make it potentially a success. So if part of their, and because they would incur some karma, I'm assuming too, to come and assist and leave their jobs. I'm wondering if part of that decision for them to come here was not only humanity, but it also had to do with, you know, some great respect for what Sanat Kumara was attempting to do, because it potentially sets a template for how you can do other solar systems and advance humanity a little quicker than the normal routine.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have to stay assigned until the last weary pilgrim makes his way home?
Yeah, that's what he said. On the other hand, he said that it's not exactly the last weary pilgrim, but he says until 60% of humanity achieve liberation, and then we will go into higher work, but the 40% will have to go to another earth where there's pain somewhere, and start their evolution over, and attempt eventually achieve liberation there. So
because they resisted.
So he's really, I guess the trick. I guess the last weary pilgrim is until the last weary pilgrim gets as far as he can go on this planet. But 40% of them will fail, and 60% will succeed eventually. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which podcast it was though. The idea of getting a hollowing out an asteroid isn't that impossible, because if you just sent an email to Elon, which I'm probably sure you have access to him,
yeah.
Is that the reason why he's creating these different inventions were, I don't know if you saw that podcast, is to be able to handle Mars environment without using humans. So the boring company who created the holes in the ground is so that they have that excavation type of project, and then the AI that he's creating is so that humans don't show up there first for a while.
He wants to go there and create a community with robots and AI,
and
then when it's all created, then send humans.
Yeah. And then also his electric cars and everything to be like almost like a Cybertruck would be more fit in that environment than a regular car. So everything is kind of set up to create a pre-human civilization before. But if we put that on an asteroid with that hollow thing, I think it would work.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier. We could send robots and AI to an asteroid. They could hollow it out. They could haul the stuff back, the rare earths, back to the Earth itself.
There should be a net outside, so when it is pinned, it will not disperse.
Yeah, that's a technical detail. Is the debris is so loose on an asteroid that if you spin it, you would have a lot of it go into space and it would fall apart. So they're working on carbon fiber, which is much stronger than anything we have today. And the idea is to wrap this carbon fiber around the asteroid, and then you could spin it as much as you want and it wouldn't fall apart.
Well, you could tie a rope onto it and bring it back to the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just put rocket propulsion on there and you can guide it anywhere you want.
How are you going to light it inside? What's going to be the
nuclear source? Fusion?
Fusion?
Well, I think he has the right rockets, though, to be able to push an asteroid a certain direction.
What'd you say?
I think he has the rocket technology to be able to move any type of...
Oh, yeah, that starship he's developing has tremendous power. It's much, much more powerful than the Saturn rocket that sent us to the moon.
Right.
And... what's interesting, he did it with such small amount of money. Like I said, NASA has spent many billions of dollars to develop their rockets. He spent maybe less than 10% of what they have spent, and he's developed rockets superior to anything NASA's done. And a lot of it's due to the fact that he's willing to make mistakes. You know, he's not demanding his rockets be perfect before they launch.
Let it explode.
And a lot of them blow up, and everybody laughs at him, and ha ha ha, he's a big failure. But he has the last laugh, because like the Falcon 9 rocket that he developed, you know, he had some failures on that as he was developing. But now it's developed, he's launched hundreds of them with none of them blown up. And he hasn't had one loss of life yet. Yet when NASA went to the moon, even though they were extremely careful and trying to be perfect, they lost several lives before they got to the moon.
I guess he's not getting having perfection getting in the way of being good.
Yeah, the perfect isn't interfering with the development of the good, so to speak. Okay. Here he says, similar to the book of Daniel, he predicts the final work of Sennacherib in relation to humanity. It says, its hierarchy, recognized appearance, will later set the stage. Now, it's the hierarchy. When we work sufficiently and become one with Christ in the spiritual hierarchy, it will later set the stage for the needed preparatory phrases, which will finally lead to the exoteric rule of the Lord of the world, emerging from his aeonial seclusion in Shambhala and coming forth into outer expression at the end of the world cycle. So at the end of the world cycle, that's a long time in the future yet. We have seven races. We're in the fifth race.
We're in the fifth sub-race of the fifth root race.
Yeah. And the sixth race will be mainly in consciousness. And as the races merge, we will become more alike. And one guy I read named Lobsang Rampa had some interesting teachings, and he said something that struck me as correct. He said, what we're evolving into will be what is called the race of tan. He says, eventually we'll all be pretty much the same color, eventually. And you can kind of see this evolving. Have you ever looked at some of the pre-1900 photos of people?
Yeah.
I mean, they just, none of them were very good looking. Have you ever seen a hot babe in that was photographed in the 1800s?
No.
Have you ever seen a woman from back in that era, you think, boy, I would really like to get with her, you know. All of them look homely, don't they?
Come on. Yeah, what about the handsome men?
Yeah. Yeah.
I showed a picture of Artie, who I thought Artie might be in a past life, and she says, she's too ugly, she says.
Well, you told me the wrong person.
Oh, yeah. The other gal was really homely.
Well, around here is a picture of Billy the Kid, you know, and he looked rather ancient, you know, kind of.
Primitive?
There's a picture on the wall in the bathroom there somewhere. Billy the Kid, and it looked kind of rough, really.
Yeah, the guys and the gals, neither one of them looked that great, but especially the women, because women are made to be desirable, so that we desire them and get together with them and propagate and have children and so on. But you look at those early pictures of women, they didn't look that great. And that's the way with all the different races. Those old photographs of them, they look primitive compared to us. So look how much the beauty of the human form has increased in, say, 150 years. We have this intermarriage, so there's hardly anybody that's racially pure. Almost everybody is a mixture because of all the blending and the communication we have. Like in ancient times, we had China completely separate, and Marco Polo went to China, and he was about the only Caucasian guy that they'd ever seen, you know, so you didn't have any intermarriage at all, very little, except in certain portions of the world, and that was very limited. But now we have intermarriage throughout the entire world, and I would say in 100 years from now, the average person's going to have a different look than now, and imagine 1,000 years from now. And then we have AI coming on board. Who knows, we may be half artificial and half human 1,000 years from now, or maybe less.